On this episode of Newt's World, we're going to talk with Congressman Mike Waltz of Florida about the Beijing Olympics and why, in fact, it's a totally wrong thing to be doing and what we should do instead. Congressman Waltz introduced a resolution in the House on February 15th calling on the U.S. Olympic Committee to withdraw from the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing unless the International Olympic Committee finds an alternative site. His decision to introduce this resolution was based on a number of very significant human rights violations carried out by the Chinese Communist Party. In the resolution, Congressman Waltz states, quote, "The Chinese Communist Party has carried out a number of heinous acts in the last year alone that should disqualify them from hosting the 2022 Winter Olympics. The world cannot legitimize the CCP's acts of genocide in Xinjiang, the destruction of the democratic rights of Hong Kong, and the dangerous suppression of the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan that cost lives by sending delegations to Beijing." I couldn't agree with Mike more. And on March 10th, the Federalist published our joint opinion piece that we wrote together entitled, "Why the 2022 Winter Olympics Need to be Moved from Beijing." Our straightforward thesis is that to protect human rights and preserve the integrity of the Games, the 2022 Winter Olympics should be moved to a location outside of Communist China. So I'm really pleased to welcome as my guest for this podcast, Congressman Mike Waltz, who represents Florida's 6th Congressional District. Mike is a proud Florida native, a colonel in the National Guard, a combat decorated Green Beret, a former White House and Pentagon policy advisor, a small business owner, and a proud father. As you can tell, he is very busy. So, welcome, Mike. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's great to be with you and just really appreciate your leadership on this.
Well, let's start with your take on the Chinese Communist Party and their actions. You're clearly a man of action, but what inspired you to introduce the resolution for the United States to withdraw from the 2022 Winter Games unless it is moved from Beijing?
Yeah, so just a little bit of history. You know, this didn't just come out of the blue. A number of human rights organizations, our senator from Florida, Rick Scott, and others have been practically begging the International Olympic Committee to move the game for years now. And they have been met with a resounding and frankly, in the words of one Uyghur human rights activist, arrogant responses from the IOC. So once we hit a year out, you know, I think sometimes we all think 2022 is still ways off. The games are actually this coming February. At a year out, I decided enough is enough, that if the IOC is not going to move the games, which apparently they're not, even though they could, then it's time for a boycott. I just cannot imagine, Mr. Speaker, the American flag flying over Beijing after unleashing COVID on the world, over 3 million people around the world dead and counting, the cover-up of the Communist Party as it pertains to the pandemic, arresting journalists, arresting doctors that were trying to blow the whistle and sound the alarm. And then on top of that, the human rights violations that you mentioned, which Secretary of State Pompeo, who also agrees we need to boycott the games, rightly called genocide. Biden's Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, has agreed it's ongoing genocide. The report coming out of the State Department verifies that there are millions of Muslims with shaved heads on their knees being loaded into rail cars, sent to concentration camps, sounds eerily familiar from the 1930s and 40s, and forced into slave labor. And their women in particular, this is just what's so sad and disgusting, are being put through mass sterilization and in many cases rape campaigns from the Chinese prison guards in an effort to exterminate an entire people. How can we then, in the wake of all of that, give the Communist Party this global platform to further their propaganda? And how can we, as a leader of the free world, along with our allies, just shrug our shoulders, turn a blind eye and say, you know, no big deal, and let them whitewash all of these atrocities? Enough is enough, and we need to take a stand.
You know, you really raise an important question. If you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, which has this horrifying presentation of what happened in the 30s and 40s with the remarkable, literal effort to exterminate Jews and other ethnic groups, and we say never again.
That's right.
But what does that mean? Never again is the nice slogan, but then we just turn our blind eye. Fortunately for what you're trying to do, over 180 human rights groups have signed a letter calling for a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Olympics. In Britain, senior political officials have called for the British Olympic Association to move the games or boycott them. Australia, Canada, and Germany's political leaders are debating calling for a boycott or calling to move the games. I'm curious, with all this going on, with the evidence about the Chinese dictatorship so clear, why are the American Olympic Committee so stubborn and in their own way so arrogant in dealing with this issue?
I think it's a mix of two things. One, they won't take our meeting, but they have met with a number of these groups. And I think in some ways, many of these international organizations, whether it's the IOC, the World Health Organization, the WHO, the U.S. Olympic Committee, they are awash in Chinese money and influence. There are incredible conflicts of interest. I don't have a great explanation. A lot of people point to our athletes and say, well, let our athletes go, let them compete, let them show that in many ways the Chinese can be beat on the international stage. They point to Jesse Owen in 1936 and how that came about. But I look at it very differently. I really put a finger at the U.S. Olympic Committee, the International Olympic Committee, and putting our athletes in this position and having to set aside their values, being able to live your life with their basic freedoms, or to be able to compete. There's no reason these games couldn't have been moved. The Tokyo Summer Games, as you know, were delayed a year because of COVID. These could be delayed and rebid and moved away from such gross atrocities. And we haven't even begun to talk about what the Communist Party has done to Tibetans and erasing their culture, what they're doing to Hong Kong right now as we speak, with people disappearing out of their homes in the middle of the night, and the ongoing atrocities against Christians across China with churches. Literally, we could see it on satellite imagery that are there one day and gone the next. I would ask those people who point to our athletes and say, would you hold the games in Rwanda in the middle of that genocide? Would you have held it in Germany in 1944 after what we knew that they were doing in the Holocaust? Would you have held it in Bosnia after Srebrenica? Absolutely not. If Georgia, just to put it in the current context, we've seen so many companies boycotting and so many athletes boycotting on this lie of restrictive voting rights. If Georgia were putting 1 million Muslims in concentration camps, I guarantee you that they wouldn't step foot in Beijing to host and to have these games.
Doesn't it strike you as sort of shocking that, to use the Georgia example, there are companies making a big deal about the Georgia election law who are enthusiastically investing in China, which has no elections, none that matter, none that are real. And yet we have this double standard. I saw this with Facebook, which had banned Donald Trump, but has five different Chinese Communist Party systems on Facebook. They also happen to have Russian systems, and they have Cuban systems and Venezuela systems. We're getting to this weird standard in America where we just kind of shrug off
truly
evil behaviors. As I think President Biden said the other day, well, there are cultural differences. That's not exactly what we're dealing with here. As you point out, mass rape is not a cultural difference. Forced sterilization is not a cultural difference. This is a regime which is anti-human. Now, there is precedent for this. In 1980, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, President Carter, who had been pretty passive and pretty cautious about foreign policy, suddenly decided he'd had enough and decided that we would boycott the Summer Olympics in Moscow in response to their December 1979 invasion of Afghanistan. It was the first and only time the U.S. boycotted the Olympics, There were 80 nations at the Olympic Games, the smallest number since 1956. The teams of 15 countries that did participate marched in the opening ceremony with the Olympic flag rather than their national flags. The Olympic flag and Olympic hymn were invoked at medal ceremonies whenever athletes from these countries won medals. Canada, West Germany, and Japan joined the U.S. in boycotting the Games, but Carter failed to persuade Britain, France, Greece, and Australia to also observe the boycott. But that does give us an example of an effort in the past to demonstrate our moral outrage when you're dealing with a dictatorship, which frankly should not ever be hosting these kind of events. What is your hope that in Congress you might be able to get something passed?
Well, I just want to address those precedents because some people say that that boycott in 1980 didn't really accomplish anything, but I think that's a misreading of history. I don't think there was a real awareness of what the Soviets were doing in Afghanistan at the time, and we now know they were carpet bombing villages, deliberately draining the swamp with which the Mujahideen swam by literally exterminating the populace, including mass landmine campaigns and shaping some of the landmines to look like toys so that children picked them up. The boycott put a bright spotlight on the Soviets' atrocities then, which eventually, I believe, led to the very successful resistance, which was one of the first dominoes to the fall of the Soviet Union. But I also want to look at times when we probably should have taken a stronger stand and didn't. We all know what Germany did to the world in the wake of 1936. And it's important to point out that Putin invaded Crimea just months after the Sochi Olympics. As a Green Beret, I know a bit about military planning. That meant the forces were being readied literally as the Olympics were going on. And that positive international spotlight emboldens these types of authoritarian regimes and basically sends the signal that everything they've done up to those games really doesn't matter. The world isn't going to care or take a strong stand, which emboldens them to push the envelope even further. And then finally, look at all of the promises that Beijing made in the run-up to the 2008 games. People forget they just had the Olympic Games. They made all kinds of promises to these same human rights organizations that they would improve their behavior, improve their record, start moving towards a reasonable acting democratic system, and they've gone exactly the opposite direction. I fear, Mr. Speaker, history is going to repeat itself, and with all of the saber rattling that we're seeing around Taiwan, in the wake of the positive spotlight from the 2022 games, I pray this prediction is wrong. Taiwan could be next.
Well, I think that's right. And I think that we also have to be aware that every time these dictatorships stare us down and they get away with whatever they're doing, they're then emboldened to assume they can get away with the next thing they're doing. I think it becomes a real problem. And in the case of what the Chinese have been doing, the evidence is pretty overwhelming. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in the Trump administration called the treatment of Uyghurs genocide. He said that since at least March 2017, China, quote, has committed crimes against humanity against the predominantly Muslim Uyghurs and other members of ethnic and religious minority groups. Again, Pompeo came back and said, China, quote, has committed genocide against the predominantly Muslim Uyghurs and other ethnic and religious minority groups in Xinjiang. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who you might have thought would be more soft on China, given the difference between Trump and Biden, came back and said, quote, my judgment remains that genocide was committed against the Uyghurs, and that has not changed. The Canadian Parliamentary Committee spoke out against the Chinese government and said, quote, the government of Canada should work with its international allies and multilateral organizations to condemn the government of China's use of concentration camps to unlawfully and unjustly detain Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims. The Australian Strategic Policy Institute recently published a report estimating that more than 80,000 Uyghurs were transferred out of Xinjiang to work in factories across China between 2017 and 2019. They'd also been tracking via satellite Xinjiang's detention system and found newly built and renovated detention centers between 2019 and 2020. They said that at least 61 detention sites have been constructed and expanded between July 2019 and July 2020, including at least 14 facilities still under construction in 2020. Even CNN had a report which outlined leaked official records that show people can be sent to the detention centers for simply wearing a veil or growing a long beard. About 114 of the detainees in the leaked records were sent to the camps for having too many children, 25 for having a passport without having traveled internationally, and 13 for having strong religious traditions in their family. This is all according to CNN, which is hardly a right-wing organization. Finally, since 2017, the U.S. State Department has determined in its trafficking in persons report that Communist China falls under Tier 3, the most severe category of tracking activity. Given all of these facts and the judgments being rendered by a number of countries, do you get much pushback about how bad the Chinese dictatorship is?
Well, I just want to unpack that a little bit further. President Biden talked about the cultural differences. Here's what the Han Chinese know. They know that in Muslim society, if a young woman has been raped, not only obviously is that a traumatic and horrific event for her, she is often then shunned within Muslim society and even oftentimes from her own family, and will find it incredibly difficult to be married and to have children. So it literally is a form of torture, but number two, it's a form of exterminating a whole race of people on top of the forced abortions and the forced sterilization. Back to the point that you made earlier that I just am having difficulty wrapping my mind around. The Biden administration pretends themselves to be the defender and the proud advocate of women's rights. This is abuse of women in the worst form. And yet, aside from Secretary of State Blinken's admittance that this is genocide ongoing, essentially has kind of been a shoulder shrug, and a shoulder shrug from the IOC and the U.S. Olympic Committee as well. And then, you know, I just want to take a second, Mr. Speaker, to take that point a little broader about the Biden administration being the defender of women's rights. We're seeing girls, according to international groups that are migrating up from the Central American countries into our southern border, being sexually assaulted at rates of 30 to 40% of the girls. I was just on a call with Afghan women, and they feel utterly abandoned or in a state of panic. It is time for not only the Biden administration, but these woke corporations that you referenced earlier to put their money where their mouth is and to step up. Talk's cheap. But the reality is, particularly on the corporate side, there's a lot of money to be lost. NBC will be broadcasting the games. Coca-Cola gets a good portion of its sugar from Xinjiang province, where the Uyghurs are. Nike, Adidas, and other brands get a lot of their cotton. And what happened with the NBA, where one coach said, "I stand with Hong Kong," and the Chinese threatened to cut them off from their entire market. These companies are scared of their bottom line and are willing to sit their values aside rather than take a stand on the very basics of human rights and women's rights. And the Biden administration is kowtowing along with them. It's really, truly sad, hypocritical, and disgusting in many ways.
Now, I keep trying to imagine you're some corporate leader, you're making, you know, in some cases, several hundred million dollars a year. Somebody comes in and says, you know, that our production involves slavery and exploitation of children as young as 8 or 9 years old. And you think to yourself, well, yeah, but gee, I mean, we have quarterly reports coming up and, you know, we have to be practical. I mean, the number of times I'm disgusted by billionaires who make their money out of dictatorships explaining practicality, I'm often reminded of the people who sold out to the Soviets or the Nazis or the fascists in Italy or Maoists in China, because after all, we have to be practical. I think the history of America is that moral courage is far more practical than bankrupt selling out. And I think that there will be a price to pay for some of these companies and the way they've dealt with this and the degree to which they literally would like to not even have the conversation. And I've always thought we should probably organize stockholders to go to every stockholder meeting of companies that are involved in exploiting slave labor or exploiting the opportunities that dictatorships give them and just force the corporate leadership publicly to explain and defend the kind of anti-human behavior that they engage in. And I think what you're doing in that sense is very, very important, because you're raising not just the issue of the Olympics, but the Olympics becomes the starting point for a genuine conversation about what our goals should be and what our role should be in dealing with countries whose governments are truly horrific. And in that sense, I'm delighted with what you're doing. What sort of response are you getting in Congress?
Well, we're getting a lot of kind of hesitation, particularly from a number of Democrats who, again, you know, it's time to walk the walk, not just talk the talk when it comes to human rights and when it comes to women's rights in particular. I have a couple of dozen sponsors, and unbelievably, they're all Republican, that we have a similar resolution in the Senate. It is more focused on demanding that the IOC move the games. But to your point, I just wanted to pull the thread a little bit more on the companies. Mr. Speaker, I built a business. I'm a proud entrepreneur. Unlike many in Congress, I can read a balance sheet and understand what it takes to make payroll. I want these companies to make money all day long. But I do draw the line with these kind of atrocities. And I draw the line when it comes to our national security. I've told many of them, some of the largest in the world, that I will help them in Congress and help them internationally. If you need to sell into a billion person market, sell into India. Right next door, 1.3 billion person marketplace, the world's largest democracy that is not actively giving speeches across its leadership as President Xi is in China, talking about replacing the American dream with the China dream and actively and aggressively repressing its own people. An Australian think tank just came out and estimates that 80 international global brands are benefiting from the supply chain and benefiting from the slave labor that's coming out of Western China. And in fact, not only are they benefiting, they're fighting to keep it. We have some legislation moving through both the House and the Senate that would cut off that supply chain and would ban these companies from benefiting from slave labor, and they actively lobbied against it. Nike, Apple, and a number of other firms included. It truly is hypocrisy, and it's a distortion of our values as a country and as a leader of the free world.
As I watched your effort and that of others on the slave labor issue, I found the open lobbying opposition of these giant corporations was astonishing. I mean, if you think about it, given Apple's profit margin or Nike's profit margin, surely they could get by without slave labor. And I don't quite know how their leadership goes to dinner at night and goes into so-called polite company. If you had to wear an armband that said, I employ slave labor, all of a sudden it'll become a different story. But they just brush all this under the rug. And it has been surprising, you know, at the time of Tiananmen Square, a lot of Democrats were pretty aggressive in favor of human rights. And for some reason, maybe again because they've gotten more and more of their money from billionaires who've made their money in China, but the Democrats have become much more passive about tolerating the kind of things we're looking at. And I'm hoping that that'll change as they're confronted by just how truly horrible some of the Chinese behavior is.
Well, but I think you're onto something there, Mr. Speaker, and I've seen it. It's across the board. Our politics are awash in Chinese money. The amount of illicit funds going into university endowments. One of the largest recipients is the Biden Center at the University of Pennsylvania, by the way. Hollywood, our sports are all awash. That's why this is such an insidious adversary. And I believe the most difficult and most dangerous that we've ever faced, with an economy that is on track to be larger than ours, with the amount of cash that is just awash across American society, a Navy that is larger than ours, and oh, by the way, they can concentrate it in one ocean, ours is spread around the world, more launches into space last year than the rest of the world combined. You know, I think we just need a real wake-up call, and my call to action for everyone listening and for everyone I speak to: when you pick something up and you see made in China, put it back down. Not only was it probably made on prison or slave labor in many cases, but that's an American job. I'm on a supply chain task force to bring that manufacturing back home. And that's not just a jobs issue, it's a national security issue. I think of the silver lining of COVID is that it showed that things like masks and gloves and pharmaceuticals, very quickly, when we can't produce them here in the United States, become a very serious issue. And the fact that we no longer can produce penicillin, the fact that the very rare earth and critical minerals that power our economy, that produce electronics and microchips, are all lithium that will produce the batteries for a green economy. I talk to the Democrats about this all the time. That's all produced now in China. And their government has created these dependencies as part of their national security strategy so that they can turn them on and off like a spigot when we disagree with them geopolitically. And that is now exactly what they're doing. And they have one of our political parties that are sitting silent because of all of these factors. And it has me incredibly concerned.
Well, and of course, just this week, we had the Biden administration decide that they would steal the patent rights to all of the vaccinations. And several people, including a former head of the Food and Drug Administration, said, look, this is like a giant gift to China. This is giving the Chinese all of our basic patent information for these drugs. They are the country most capable of manufacturing it once they had the knowledge. So we're actually going to weaken American companies, create a terrible precedent of stealing the property, and then help China actually produce at lower cost, which they will then use in their foreign policy. So
that's right.
It's exactly the sort of thing you're talking about, and where I think this whole issue of supply chain becomes central to our national security strategy, because it doesn't do you much good to have a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier if you cannot produce the various and sundry transistors and chips that are necessary for your equipment to operate. And I think we really underestimate how smart the Chinese have been about building a deep, long supply chain dominance, which they're fully prepared to exploit if they can. I want to congratulate you for the work you're already doing. I want to encourage you to know that it's historically important what you're doing, not just on the Olympics, but what you're doing in taking on the entire question of how we deal with a totalitarian dictatorship, the size and the aggressiveness of China. I wish you really well. This is going to be a pretty wild and interesting Congress before it's over. And I have a hunch that when we talk next year, we'll be talking to somebody who's part of the Republican majority, and that the American people will have decided that they want a party and a government that are prepared to stand up for America and do what's right for America. And you'll be one of the key players, Mike, in having made that happen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I've fought all over the world to defend this republic. It's an honor now to be representing the Floridians that I do, but I will be damned if I am going to be sitting in my rocking chair one day, having my kids and grandkids grow up in a country led by socialists and in a world led by Chinese communists. And I truly feel like we are just a few breaths away from that becoming a reality. So this great nation is absolutely worth the fight. But I pray your prediction is correct and that Nancy Pelosi is in retirement eating ice cream back home in California this time next year.
That'll be great. And I look forward to having you come and join us again in the future for another podcast reporting on the work you're doing. So thank you very, very much, Mike.
All right. God bless. See you soon.
Thank you to my guest, Congressman Mike Waltz. You can read more about boycotting the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing on our show page at NewsWorld.com. NewsWorld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Garnsey Sloan. And our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying NewsWorld, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of NewsWorld can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.